It's 8 o'clock. Good morning. I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News. Our weather forecast for today is calling for mostly cloudy skies and partly cloudy this afternoon, and we'll have a high in the 20s. We're currently at 24 degrees, which was where we were for the past hour and a half or so. In the news, the U.S. military is testing an Iowa State University psychology professor's theories about which tactics work best when questioning terrorism suspects.
We're now in our fifth year, and we're actually doing a field validation study with the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, in which we're actually training more than 100 of their investigators with the new science-based methods.
That's Christian Meisner, an Iowa State University professor who's been leading an international team of researchers on the topic. He says they've discovered the scientific approach yields better results.
Understanding what factors might be important in eliciting cooperation and eliciting information from individuals who would be reticent to provide it. With my colleagues here in the U.S. and the U.K. and Europe and Southeast Asia and even the Middle East, we've conducted studies to try to understand the psychological and contextual factors that influence whether people will provide information.
According to Meisner, the tactics that work best in these type of interrogations are nothing like you see on TV and in the movies.
Shows like Jack Bauer and movies like Zero Dark Thirty, I think they do a disservice to the discourse around this topic.
Meisner's research shows the locked, windowless room is the least effective setting for getting a terrorism suspect to reveal his or her secrets. Hostile or aggressive questioning isn't effective either.
Who would you tell your deepest, darkest secret to? Somebody who came in the room who you didn't know, who demanded that you were truthful with them and told them the most embarrassing elements of your life? Or somebody who you got to know over time, developed a relationship with, had trust in, and began to be willing to disclose that information?
Fruitful interrogations would be very boring to watch, according to Meisner. Most Iowa school districts are now offering students healthier snacks that focus more on things like juice or an apple instead of chips, a candy bar, or pop. A survey from the Kids Safe and Healthful Food Project finds that more than 9 out of 10 Iowa school districts are in compliance with new federal recommendations. Jessica Donzie Black is the project's director, and she says Iowa's doing very well.
In 2012, USDA rolled out updated standards for school lunch and school breakfast to make sure that they, too, were serving what it was kids really needed. And as of this past spring, 91% of districts in Iowa had been certified as meeting those standards. So really the vast majority of schools are serving healthier lunches, healthier breakfasts on a daily basis.
In recent months, there were reports of Iowa students being unhappy with their menu choices, chucking the healthier foods in the trash. Donzie Black says that Iowa schools are seeing more favorable results when students are included in the effort.
They've done taste tests. They've invited students to be part of the menu planning process. They've served foods in a way that's more interesting to kids or give kids more decision-making authority, like having salad bars or make-your-own-sandwich bars.
She says 64 million meals were served in Iowa's public schools last year, which shows why it's so important to emphasize good nutrition. A recent poll found 72% of parents favor national standards for school meals, and just as many support standards for school snacks.
Schools will be implementing updated standards that reflect current nutrition science around more fruits and vegetables, more whole grains, healthier proteins, lean, low-fat dairy, in reasonable portion sizes without too much sodium or sugar or fat or things kids don't need as much of.
Donzie Black says it's a matter of cash incentives for administrators. Schools that meet the standards get a larger reimbursement from the USDA. So she says the 9% of Iowa districts that aren't complying aren't getting as much federal money. Time is running out to make charitable contributions that can be claimed on your 2014 tax returns. IRS spokesman Bill Brunson says you have to do so by midnight on December 31st.
And these can be either in cash or non-cash contributions to a qualified charity that the IRS recognizes. And to find out if that charity that you're going to gift to is recognized as an exempt organization by the IRS, folks can go to irs.gov and use the Select Check tool by keying in the name of the organization, and the IRS will then tell you whether it is currently recognized as an exempt organization or not.
Brunson says you have to have paperwork proving your donation.
If you gift cash, you need to get a record for any amount. If you gift non-cash items, if the value of those items is in excess or exceeds $250 of value, you feel, then you should get a written receipt also.
He said there are cases where you can keep track of non-cash items and still claim them.
If you were to go to the Salvation Army after they closed and you dropped off at night the items, then you could make your own record that would be acceptable by the Internal Revenue Service, and you need to provide basic items such as the date and the time and the location, and specifically what it is that you're leaving there at that charity.
Non-cash items such as clothing and household items must be in good used condition or better to be deductible. Brunson says donations can be paid by credit card or check and can be deducted on your 2014 taxes even if the organization does not process them until 2015.
You are able to claim it on your 2014 return. But once again, you have to take that action before midnight December 31st.
There are also ways of putting off taxes until a later date.
People have the ability to defer tax on monies that they earn by putting them in a qualified pension fund or an individual retirement arrangement. You must make your contributions to your qualified pension fund before the end of the year for it to be reflected on your 2014 statement.
The one important thing to remember, he says, is you need proof of what you have done to go along with your return.
Record keeping doesn't cost a taxpayer anything, and it will save them money when it becomes tax time. Good records will make sure that you pay only the correct amount of tax, no more, no less. So save your receipts, save your documents.
And many Iowans find the holidays to be the most stressful rather than the most wonderful time of the year. Des Moines psychologist Paul Ashman says packed schedules can be both mentally and emotionally taxing. He recommends focusing on the aspects of the holidays that are important to you.
And it's also okay to say no to things. If you don't want to go to an event, it is all right to decline an invitation or to say I have too many commitments. And if you show up at an event and you find that it's dysfunctional or you're not being respected, then I think it's okay to leave.
Holiday parties that include a lot of alcohol can also present a challenge for someone in recovery. Ashman says it might be helpful for a recovering alcoholic to alert the host prior to the party.
Talking with the host can be a way to potentially change the event. Sometimes people will choose to not have alcohol at an event. Other times people in recovery may feel okay with it being present as long as they're not being kind of like pushed to drink.
Holiday gatherings are not a good time to stage an intervention or confront someone with drug or alcohol issues, according to Ashman. He recommends family members approach the person in a private setting when they are sober. That is a check of the news on KJAN. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.